786. Welcome back to Saturday Night's award-winning Sports Desk. I'm your host Nazim White, and with me in the studio my co-presenter Bini Mohammed, and Khalid Ali, he's on the other side of the line. Also, I'd like to remind you that you are tuned into 100.4 FM Stereo. And to be part of the show, call us on 0216991786 and WhatsApp line 0786101112. Well, we've been joined by the Springbok physiotherapist. Rene Naylor is with us in the studio. And we all know, if you are a rugby enthusiast, you will know who Rene Naylor is. Oh, if you didn't know, now you know. That is the woman that runs onto the field to attend to those burly Springboks and talented bunch of rugby players that have won the 2019 World Cup. Rene, great to have you in the studio. Thanks for coming in.
Great to be in the studio. Good evening. Assalamu alaikum to all the Radio 786 listeners. It's great to be here.
No, absolutely. I think it's a bit of a scoop for Radio 786 Sports to get you to the studio. When Bini said to me he's getting Rene Naylor in, I said, good luck, Bini. See how quickly you can get them in. He also said to me he's getting Sia in, and that one fell through. But it's awesome to have a World Cup winner in the studio. And I regard you as a World Cup winner because I think you play a crucial role in making sure those players are in peak condition. Rene, but before we even get to winning the World Cup, as a woman in sport, a bit of background about yourself and why rugby, and how did you get involved in this game that they call tough men play? We all know it's not all tough men, but it's a tough game to play out there. But how did Rene Naylor get to be a physio and get involved in, most probably, like I mentioned earlier, one of our greatest sporting assets, the Springboks?
Yes, so for me, rugby's always been part of my family. We've always been watching rugby. No, in the family has been a professional provincial rugby player, but we always watched rugby. And I think in 95, watching a World Cup game at Newlands, sitting there in that stadium and just looking at the physios on the pitch, I thought it must be exciting to actually be there. That's the best view of the game. And I must say, at that stage, there was no dream to be the Springbok physio, but just to work with a rugby team was actually the vision, because I was a newly qualified physio at the time. I just qualified in 1993. So that's where it really started for me. And I mean, I started at club rugby and, yes, worked in, you know, provincial rugby. And it took me 10 years before I actually got the appointment and call up for the Springboks.
Yes, Rene, welcome to 786. It's a huge honor to have you here. A World Cup winner in our studio. Wow. That speaks volumes. I have one question for you, Rene. Just your role as, you know, you were one of the first women to be part of the Springbok side, you know, with the two previous other ladies being Dr. Cheryl Cole in 2007 and also, you know, Annalie Murray, the PR manager. So what was it like for you to go into a male-orientated, you know, environment and a Springbok winning band? What was it like?
Yes, that's an interesting question. So for me, I think having worked in rugby for 10 years prior to getting to the Springboks, I had exposure of being the sort of only female in a male environment. But the players did sort of tease me quite a bit, the Stormers players. Going into the Springboks, they said, no, Buckies is not going to listen to you. You're going to struggle with these, the Bulls players. And in fact, the players were really good about having a female physio. There was no real problems. And I think for me, it was more important to just be, you know, respected as a professional and to be respected as a good physiotherapist rather than considering, you know, my gender. But, you know, there's obviously limitations. I'd never played the game before. So I went in knowing that and put a lot of energy and effort into learning more and more about the game and, you know, understanding, you know, the maul formation and the ruck formation and the scrum calls and the line out calls and all of those things that, as not being a player, I was not familiar with.
Tell me, I just want to take a step back on how you became interested in physiotherapy. There was a story about your dad when you were in grade 10, I think, where he broke his leg and you went with him to the doctor, and that is also where it all started for you.
Yes, no, definitely. We decided on physiotherapy in standard 8. That's for the younger listeners. That was grade 10. He broke his leg playing a community, you know, soccer game for the church, and he had to go for physiotherapy. And I was very inquisitive. At that stage, I thought I wanted to do medicine. But when I saw what physio was about and my interest in sport, it was clear for me. Physiotherapy was my first, second, and third choice.
Okay.
So, yes, I'm very blessed that I still enjoy it.
No, absolutely. And tell me, obviously, going to become in a male-dominated sporting arena, you then started out with the Stormers and junior rugby first before you got hold of the Stormers, and then obviously you found your way basically in what everybody most probably dream of if you in the physiotherapy or just in part of a sporting environment, being part of one of the great rugby teams in the world.
Yes, I must say that was definitely the pinnacle of my career, being called up to the Springboks. I didn't think that appoint a female as the physiotherapist at the time, so I was quite satisfied with getting to work for Currie Cup and for the Stormers at Western Province, having come from club rugby, which was, you know, where we're really passionate, you know, rugby started for me. And yes, being with the Springboks is special because, you know, rugby means a lot more than just a game in South Africa. It means a lot for our people, and particularly after last year. You know, it's about, you know, giving hope to people and about making people believe that you, and for myself, I'd like, you know, young girls out there in the townships to believe they can be on a world stage. You know, me coming from the Cape Flats. So that's the powerful thing for me.
And I think that's important what you said about where you come from. A lot of people think you go to schools on the Cape Flats or you're born on the Cape Flats and that's the end. I think we can point out to a lot of top sport people, like Calvin Peterson. He hails from Bonteville, not too far from here, and he was the first Bafana soccer captain. So there's so many we can mention of people who grew up on the Cape Flats, and I don't think it's where you grow up. I think it's where you want to end, and I think that is where it all started for you as well. And you mention it's any girl out there or woman's dream that if they want to achieve, you are obviously a good example of what happened to you and where you end up at the moment.
Yes, I think it's important to defy the stereotypes of where we should end up. But I also, you know, like to challenge corporates out there to invest in young girls in the townships, because you can't just rely on the hard work and dreams of young girls, because there's going to be obstacles that are going to be bigger than them that they're going to encounter. And they need corporates to invest in girls and in women in sport in particular, because it's much harder for them, for the female athlete. And for the female involved in, you know, sport journalism or in sport administration, and even, you know, the lack of females in administration and, you know, managerial positions in sport.
Tell me quickly, we spoke about obviously, your involvement with the Springboks and, corporates coming in and making it, a bit easier for people from disadvantaged areas as part of the Springbok, setup. And when you guys go around to various grounds on the Cape Flats or disadvantaged areas, your take on, has there been an improvement on facilities and what does it mean to those people and those kids when the Springbok bus pulls up?
Thing for me.
And I think that's important what you said about where you come from. A lot of people think you go to schools on the Cape Flats or you're born on the Cape Flats and that's the end. I think we can point out to a lot of top sport people, like Calvin Peterson. He hails from Bonteville, not too far from here, and he was the first Bafana soccer captain. So there's so many we can mention of people who grew up on the Cape Flats, and I don't think it's where you grow up. I think it's where you want to end, and I think that is where it all started for you as well. And you mention it's any girl out there or woman's dream that if they want to achieve them, you are obviously a good example of what happened to you and where you end up at the moment.
Yes, I think it's important to defy the stereotypes of where we should end up. But I also, you know, like to challenge corporates out there to invest in young girls in the townships, because you can't just rely on the hard work and dreams of young girls, because there's going to be obstacles that are going to be bigger than them that they're going to encounter. And they need corporates to invest in girls and in women in sport in particular, because it's much harder for them, for the female athlete and for the female involved in, you know, sport journalism or in sport administration, and even, you know, the lack of females in administration and, you know, managerial positions in sport.
Tell me quickly, we spoke about obviously your involvement with the Springboks and corporates coming in and making it a bit easier for people from disadvantaged areas. As part of the Springbok setup, and when you guys go around to various grounds on the Cape Flats or disadvantaged areas, your take on, has there been an improvement on facilities, and what does it mean to those people and those kids when the Springbok bus pulls up in those townships or community areas?
I think it means a lot, and I think that has been so a powerful message since, you know, 2018, with Rassie saying that we want to be accountable to our people, because we're supposed to be accountable to the people and to the people on the ground. So it has always been special to go out into the townships. And I think I have to think about the time we were on the bus, that trophy tour that we did the week after the World Cup, where you actually saw the people come out in their thousands. That was just like goosebump moments when you finally realize that it's a lot more than just a match we won.
No, absolutely. And we're going to come to that World Cup, what happened in Japan, in a couple of minutes. I want to talk about the challenges as a physio, you know, and about what is your main purpose of, we know a lot of people and a lot of listeners out there only know Rene Naylor of running on the field with a bag and, you know, give some water and they're the guys. But maybe the background of what is it really in the day of a bok physio?
Yes, I think that water is important. That's magic water.
And not forgetting the ice as well.
Yes, magic water, magic ice, and then the famous words, yeah, but no fuss bait.
Okay.
No, I think that, you know, that perception is, even in my own family, they think that my job is running on with the water. And I think my job starts long before that. That's actually the easy part. When the game starts, you feel relieved because, you know, you fix the guys and they able to get onto the pitch, and you've been able to present to your coaches his players that he'd like to select for the game. And that's ultimately what we aim to do, to give him an opportunity to select his best team week in and week out, because, you know, you want consistency in a team, and that's where your medical team plays such a powerful role. So it's not just injury management, but it's also the injury prevention. And that we pay a lot of attention to in the off season and pre season, and in the COVID season, we've had to spend a lot of time focusing on injury prevention, allowing guys to work on those areas that they don't always have time to work on in season, to actually say, this is your injury risk profile, which is mainly what I do as a physiotherapist, to say to the guy, you're going to be at risk this season for a groin injury, or for a hamstring injury or your ankle injury based on my screening. And this is what I think you should focus on to try and prevent that from happening in the season.
And yes, brother, Rene, I just want to ask one question. You know, speaking about the injuries as well, could you take us to how the Springbok preparation goes in the week, perhaps? Do you see the players every single session? Is it every single day? Could you just elaborate on that a little bit?
Yes, the week, it's a very tight and very busy week. We're all busy, you know, full on 24/7. The day starts off very early. I usually, you know, by 7 o'clock we're in the physio room. I call it a 7-11. You know, it's 7 and it closes at 11 o'clock. So we'll start treating a few guys before the first meeting, because they'll have a meeting early morning. We'll then strap them. They'll go out and do their first training session. They'll come back for a lunch. And during that lunchtime, we would treat some players again. We'll strap them again for the second training session in the afternoon. They'll come back. Then they'll have meetings, reviews of the day. We'll look at the goal of the day. Have we achieved it as a team? And then there'll be treatments after that. So it's a very full day. And then there's certain nights I'll organize massage therapists to come in and help with the recovery. There's usually 6 to 8 players. Obviously, that won't be the case now, but usually 6 to 8 players in the physio room. A few getting treated. A few will be on recovery pumps to relax their muscles. They'll be on the game ready, on the ice machine. They'll be on the complex. So there's a lot of activity in the physio room. We call it the healing center.
And tell me, obviously, your input to the coach, and in this case, Rassie Erasmus, must be so important when you have to report back, and the whole medical team when you have to, because he needs to make a decision on who's going to be selected.
Yes, that's a very important point. And I think that, you know, that's probably the most challenging in my rugby career, is establishing that very good, solid relationship with your coach, that there's trust. Then you don't actually have any problems, you know, along the line. And I think that as a medical team, we usually have our doctor as the head of the medical team, and that communicates the information from the physiotherapist. So what we normally would do is we will have meetings as a medical team, and then there's one voice that goes to the coach regarding the player. And usually we are a team of physios. So it's not just myself. We've got two in the World Cup, for example. We were 3 physios working very closely together. If you start treating a particular player for his injury, you'll continue with that management. We support each other, and we have regular discussions planning the management.
Tell me, Renee, obviously winning is everything for Springbok Rugby, and not only for the team but for the country. We know what happened in 1995. We know what happened in 2007, and 2019 was most probably one of the highlights for many South Africans. We needed a Springbok victory in Japan. We mentioned earlier we lost against the All Blacks. Tell me, how did you guys, the team, not the players, rally the Springboks to playing the best rugby that we've ever seen for many, many years in the 2019 World Cup?
Yes, you mentioned the loss. So that loss to the All Blacks in the start of the World Cup was big for us. It was not part of the plan. And up until then, everything had gone according to plan, wanting to be there, the first country to arrive in Japan. We know we had a very good and strenuous preparation. We knew we were dealing with the environmental conditions of, you know, very high humidity. So that was like acclimatizing us, you know, that first 2 weeks, and we had our warm-up game against Japan. But that week preparation for that All Black game wasn't great. So when we reflected, I mean, if I think back, I can actually remember sitting in that room in that review meeting on the Monday, because Monday mornings is review of the game. That review meeting went on much longer than it was supposed to, because we had to reflect.
And then also, yes, just also while speaking about that, also the injuries of Trevor Nyakani and Jesse. Could you just elaborate on that? How was that?
That was the hard part for me. You know, and I was very optimistic, because, you know, in a World Cup, you think differently. You just basically give all players hope and the coach, and you try to go beyond what is normally expected. You know, push boundaries. Well, if it wasn't a World Cup, you'd just say straight away, this guy's going to be out. But because it's a World Cup, the guy's prepped for over 600 days for this World Cup. You're not just going to write it off and say you have to go back home. You're going to give him a chance. And so you're going to give him a chance. We did our review, and we went back on track. And that is probably how we dealt with, you know, any loss.
Tell me, Renee, 2015, lost against Japan. Renee Naylor decided he's going to take a break from rugby. 2018, you got the call from Rassie Erasmus. What did that call mean to you to be part of? You took about 2.5 years break from being part of the Springbok setup, and I think it was evident people didn't see you on TV anymore running onto that field. But your comeback. Let's talk about that comeback as part of leading up to the 2019 World Cup.
Yes, Nazim, I think it's important in sport. You know, I often used to say to myself, you need to reflect every year and ask yourself, and this is something that I actually learned from Rassi when I started working with him, 15 years ago. He said he had a very powerful message when he spoke to players and to all of us, and he said, you know, you must always think, if you're taking more than you're giving to the game, then your time is up.
Yeah.
And that is always an important reflection. And when I decided in 2015, I mean, that was the lowest point for me, Brighton. It's actually today. It's exactly 5 years today.
Oh, wait.
Someone sent me a reminder and says, do you remember this day? One of the team members. And I says, yes, how could I forget? It was the lowest point of my rugby career was that Brighton game against Japan that we lost 34-32. And you do question after a game like that, are you doing enough? What is your role in it? Because ultimately, I think in any sport, for me, it's ultimately about winning.
Yeah.
People say it's about family and friends and making connections, but ultimately you need to win. And we all have to play our role to get that win. So coming back, so obviously I took a break, wanted to focus on my family, my private practice, but I really missed the game. So I felt lost on a weekend. I had to take, you know, it took me a while to find out what to do with myself because, you know, rugby had become part of my life and traveling with the team had become part of my life. So when Rassi called and asked if I'd like to come back and win the World Cup, I was super excited. I was ready. I didn't have to think twice. It was.
Yeah. Tell me, getting back in there, and a lot of people talk about Rassi Erasmus. You can answer it. You don't need to answer. It's fine. But basically, the culture changed in the dressing room. It was not like before. A lot of people say Rassi made everybody feel welcome. He said everybody had to talk the same language, and the language was rugby. Tell us about that, how that changed the whole philosophy of Springbok rugby in 2018, and obviously leading into the successful 2019 World Cup win.
Yes, it was a very powerful shift, mind shift. You know, and we use the word transformation, but I think it was transformation not just on changing the color of people, which often people think that's all transformation's about. I think it was an amazing mind shift. He used the word alignment, and I often teased him and said, you know, it's a big word for a guy from dispatch, alignment. But he said, yes, you know, we want everyone aligned, and we had alignment camps, which was really mind, you know, boardrooms, meetings, not on the field. Before we got to the field, we made sure that everyone was aligned, and there was no longer that privacy about information, but transparency. And the transparency was there every week. We are going to transform. This is what he said. This was on our board. Transformation experience is going to get us, and depth was going to get us to win this World Cup. And we spoke about it for over 600 days.
614 days to be exact. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Seventh on the rankings when you went to the World Cup. Obviously, we know what happened in the World Cup. South Africa became the number one team in the world. Tell us, I'm going to jump quickly to a question, and maybe I'll ask you that question a bit later. But let's go to the challenges in your career. What Rene Naylor would like to tell the listeners, what was the major challenges in your career? I mean, you're a World Cup winner, you know, and when you win a World Cup, the challenges slightly becomes a bit easier. But prior to that, the challenges 2010 leading all up to where you are now.
Yes, I think, you know, the challenges for myself personally was obviously joining the Springbok setup in 2008 when it was a very different setup to what it was now, and feeling I needed to really prove myself that I was, you know, going to be respected as a professional and that I was going to make an impact to the team. And it was a completely different era. It was a hierarchical era. It was, you know, it was about how long you were there. You could say more. If you had just come in, you sit in front in the bus. If you were there longer, you could sit at the back of the bus. Literally, you know, you needed to know Donnie Craven very well, which was controversial for me, my background. So it was a completely different culture, Afrikaner dominated culture that I came into and adapted to. and embraced because I wanted to be part of this brand. And a completely different setup in 2018. But my challenge is probably motherhood. Mm. You know, I don't think that the team or the, my employer was ready for me to become a mother. And I think that if I look back now, they must have thought, you know, gosh, you're probably going to leave a job. Mm. You know, she's now going to focus on being a mom. And I was just very blessed that when I did tell Heineke, he was very positive and supportive. But he did say to me, wait until you become a mother because you may change your mind and not want to come back. So I'm not sure if that was an expectation, but I did come back. And I think that was a major, you know, challenge for myself and for the team to navigate.
Renee, tell us now about 2019. Lost against the All Blacks. It was some tough games. Wales was a very tight semi-final. But what was it? What was the feeling when that final whistle went against England at the Yokohama Stadium?
Gosh, you take me back there. Then it's really emotional because it was just for myself personally. It was just about all the sacrifices that you'd made. I was away from my family for very long, away from my son for very long, and it made it all worth it. You know, just that, and we all knew we were going to be away from home for 20 weeks, and, you know, 21 weeks was going to be our trophy tour. There was a quiet confidence in the team. We went around up, you know, about our business, and I felt even more confident that last week. After that semi-final, I must say, after the semi-final, I felt quiet confidence, even though lots of my friends phoned me and said, don't worry, you know, we're happy you're getting to the final. And I thought to myself, no, we came here to win. Mm. Getting to the final wasn't enough. And yes, it was probably definitely the pinnacle of my career.
And what did it mean for the team? We know what it meant for South Africa. I think myself and my partner over there, we were watching the game in Kenilworth Center when and I had to report on that game. And I think I reported, if I can remember, on when Siya Kolisi lifted the trophy. I actually made that report of what I saw on television, and it was crazy the way it went on. It felt like you were right there. I can just imagine what happened inside that stadium and in that dressing room.
No, it was very special. It was really unbelievable what we felt. And I don't think we realized what was going on back home. Because for us, it was just, you know, we'd been through this journey for so long. We'd been through so many struggles, so many challenges in the 2 years to get there, and we had finally done it. I think, yeah, it was, I don't think I could ever relive something like that again.
Yeah, Rene, as well, I mean, to touch on it as well, it was actually two trophies you guys won. You won the rugby championship as well, for not forgetting that, and the World Cup. So it was probably your best year as a Springbok physio. Yeah.
Yes, no, I think in 2009 was also that special year, because that was the last time, 2009 was the last time I'd held a trophy. So I'd had a barren few years, you know, of 10 years with the Springboks. So, you know, doing the championship and the British Irish Lions in 2009 was very powerful. And now winning the championship and again, you know, the World Cup was really, really, really something special.
Rene, we're running out of time, but I want to ask you two more questions. COVID-19 came in, rugby came to a standstill. The other side of the world is playing rugby. How are you guys managing to, and I know we're a bit far back from a playing point of view, but what has happened behind the scenes, you know, just getting players? I know I don't know if you guys all got together, but how, what's the message out there from the management team, making sure that players still stay in peak condition, and when the go-ahead is given, they're not so far behind where rugby is played in the northern and southern hemisphere at the moment?
Yes, we did our best from the very start. From level 5, there was a lot of virtual meetings between the management, the medical team, and between the players. So there was lots of, you know, profiles being given. I even did virtual assessments of players back at their house or on the farm or wherever they found themselves, whether they were in South Africa or overseas. Mm-hmm. We made contact. We've continued that contact, and not just the medical team, but also the coaches, looking at how we could work on things outside, you know, not being on the pitch. But obviously, being on the pitch is the ultimate, and they'll have to, you know, do sports-specific, you know, training. And we're obviously excited about the fact that we are going to start domestic rugby next week with the first game on the 26th of September.
Yes, Rene, I just have one more question before we go to Shane Ayub on the line. You just, in 2020, just to tell the listeners, you actually just won an award from the minister. Can you just tell us about what that award meant to you? Because, I mean, you've just won the World Cup in 2019, you've won the Rugby Championship, and now you win this award. It must be very good in the life of Rene Nail at the moment.
Yes, oh, that was so, it was really humbling. It was so unexpected. And it was the first time that they'd recognized a medical professional for that award, with G Sport and with Momentum. So it was really, really special for me. And it was special for me because I just hoped that it would, you know, show other women of what you can achieve, irrespective of where you come from. And then obviously personally for my son, it was, you know, because there was lots of sacrifices, and for my parents, lots of sacrifices and lots of, you know, they've really been the pillar of strength, and without their support, I wouldn't have been able to do this. So for me, that was just, it was an amazing recognition. I'm really humbled by it.
And finally, I'd like to ask you, how do you plan on using your success story to inspire young women out there to, we spoke about it earlier, to fulfill their dreams?
Yes, I'd love to use my story and my journey and my obstacles to inspire young girls out there, and to be able to be a mentor, you know, for young girls, particularly girls that want to follow in my footsteps and mirror what I've achieved, to be a mentor to them. Because without a mentor, it becomes really hard. That's the one message I'd give to young people out there that want to go far in life. Have someone that believes in you, whether it's from your church, your mosque, your community, your family. Have someone that believes in you, that can guide you through the obstacles, because there will be obstacles.
Rene Naylor, thank you very much for coming in this evening, chatting to us about your journey. And also, I think the listeners out there know a bit more about the physiotherapist who makes sure that Springbok Rugby is always in peak shape. And I think it's even your help and your support to those rugby players is even going to be more needed now, because when you're the World Cup champions, those other countries are going to come for you, and those tackles are going to be harder, and there'll be more work for Rene Naylor and team to come. But thank you very much. I think it's an awesome achievement, what you guys have done for rugby in South Africa, and especially your contribution to what women does for sport in this country. I think it's our greatest asset, and you have definitely played your role in making one of the success stories in South African sport. Thanks for coming, and safe home.
Shukran, thank you very much for having me. It's been really good. And good night to all the listeners.
Thank you very much. Well, that's Rene Naylor. Thanks for coming in. And I think it was such a lovely conversation with her. We all know a bit more about Rene Naylor now. Soon we'll be chatting to another cricket legend, Ayub. Hussein Ayub, he'll be chatting to us about his book, Crossing Boundaries, and also just giving us an insight on where it all started for him, a great fast bowler, and we are so happy that we can catch up with him in a couple of minutes. We're going to go for a short break, and when we come back, we speak to another cricket legend, Hussein Ayub.
Radio 786, 100.4 FM stereo. Radio 786, 100.4 FM stereo.